Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome to our sensational Seder. Again, for those who were here last year, it's pretty much a repeat, so it's good to review. For those that haven't been here, how many were here? Solomon and his wife, about four of you were here. Okay, so there's a lot of you weren't here. Everybody should have a Haggadah, and there were some handouts that Paul gave out. Where's the extras? Here? Okay. So this is our sensational Seder, where we hope to give you some insights. Oh, yeah, you might as well turn on. We have to give you some insights as to how to have your guests have a meaningful Seder, children, guests, yourself, and you already see what it's all about a little bit. So before we can succeed in any planned activity, first we have to know what the goal of the activity is. So I always give a story of this fellow, and you could use all this material at the Seder. This fellow who goes to open up a business. He opens up a shoe store. He opens up a shoe store, and the first day there's like a million customers. It's an opening sale, a million customers coming. Every day there's customers coming. He's so busy, he can't stop working. It looks unbelievable. 3 months into the business, every day people are coming there. 3 months, he puts a sign, going out of business. Going out of business? What are you going out of business for? You were doing great business. So he didn't have any more money to buy any more shoes. It was a shoe store. So they said, what's going on? So the auditor comes in, takes a look, and he starts looking at his books. He says, look, he looks. He bought shoes. The shoes cost him $50. Okay, fine. So what did he sell the shoes for? $25. Selling for $25. So the auditor said, what were you doing that for? You're buying them for $50, selling them for $25? This guy says, well, of course, that's where you get business. That's where you get customers. And the whole idea is to have a lot of customers. So the auditor said, no, you're right, you need customers. The whole idea is to make a profit. So if you make a profit, then that's why you went into business. You went into business to make money. You didn't go into business to sell shoes. Now, hopefully, selling shoes is the way you make the money. So that little story tells us that you can spend a lot of time working on an activity, but you never achieve your goal, since our activities may not be focused on the goal and are ultimately unrelated to that goal. Selling shoes for cheap, that wasn't the goal. The goal was to make money. If you don't make money when you sell a pair of shoes, you haven't gotten anywhere. So that's the same thing about the Seder. You have to know what the goal of the Seder is. If you don't know what the goal of the Seder is, you're just going through the motions and you really don't know what you're supposed to accomplish. So, on a more global level, the question really is, what is the goal of the holidays in general that the Jewish people celebrate? The holidays of Pesach, Shavuos, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, what is the goal of all of those holidays? And these are all questions I'm asking you. You could ask people at the Seder. These are all questions you could ask people at the Seder. What are we here for tonight? You could have, if you have adults, you could have a discussion. Some will just say, I'm here to have a good meal. And others might try to come up with some answers to go through the Haggadah. Why are we going through the Haggadah? What are we trying to experience? So the answer is that all of the holidays, the goal of all the holidays is to teach us to have emunah in Hashem, to develop our belief in Hashem, to further enhance our trust in God. That's the purpose of the holidays. And each holiday does it in a different way. The holiday Shavuos, his goal is to implant in us belief in God through the intellect. We employ the intellect. We have to understand the message of the Torah. And what do we do on Shavuos? We do a lot of learning. We step the whole night learning Torah. We use our intellect to cultivate and develop this trust in God. The high holiday season, which includes Sukkot, we more employ the emotional aspect of ourselves. You got to understand your relationship with God through the tshuva that you do, through the simcha and the joy you have from Sukkot. It's a very emotional time. And that's a different part. Intellect is the mind. Emotional is the heart. And it addresses a certain issue. We come to Pesach. The goal of Pesach is, yes, to cultivate belief in God, but not so much through the intellect, not so much through the emotional, but through the physical. Through one's sensory abilities. We call that in Hebrew, the Hebrew term is called emuna bechush. Belief in God that you can taste, that you can feel, that you can touch. And that really is, quote unquote, the lowest level in terms of hierarchy of human function. Physical is the lowest. Then we get then it can be intellectual, emotional. You can, you know, it's different levels between emotional and intellectual. But the bottom line, the lowest level, is to have a physical attachment to it. And since Pesach is the first of the holidays, the physical attachment is keen. And the mystics tell us, the Kabbalists tell us, to connect to God intellectually is not a very easy thing to do. It's a very hard thing to do. It's much easier to connect to God and to reveal one's own soul through the physical, through the senses. The whole goal of Judaism is to reveal the soul that's inside. That's the goal. When you reveal the soul, then you believe in God. You don't have to go through mathematical equations, proofs to God's existence. Once you experience God, you don't need any more proofs. Right? The godliness that encompasses this world, the godliness that manifests in the human being is the greatest tool of revealing godliness within himself. Once you reveal what's inside, you don't need any proofs. Does anybody need a proof to know that your mother was your mother? The fact, who else was going to stay up with you, your little kid, making in your diapers and up in the middle of the night with 104 fever and vomiting on the plush carpet? Who else is going to take care if it wasn't your mother? And that person was doing that day in, day out. You don't need any proofs. You don't need any DNA tests. You know that I know that's my mother. So the same thing, we want to walk away from the holidays knowing there's God. The easiest way to do that is through the senses. And that's why Pesach is such a universally accepted holiday amongst all streams of Judaism, because it doesn't require deep intellectual thought like Sukkot does. It doesn't need to go on this emotional roller coaster between the fear of judgment and then the happiness of Sukkot. Here we use what anyone can use, your body, your physical senses, to come to this knowledge of what God is. So that is the goal of the Seder, is to come to an awareness of God, a belief in God, through the physical senses of your body. That's the goal. And if you look in the Haggadah, we're just going to highlight a few pages here. If you look on page 44 in this Haggadah, I would not necessarily recommend this Haggadah, but it's the only one I have a lot of. Why did I say 44? Oh, because I'm looking at the wrong Haggadah. That's why. Look at my notes, I'm looking at 44. It's not the right thing. Let's try this one. Maybe it's my 44. Yes. Yes, it's my 44. What's in your Haggadah? We'll have to find out. I'll tell you 1 second. It's the statement of Bechol Dor Vador in every generation. So it's on page, in your Haggadah, it's on page 23 at the bottom. And this is the key. This is the key of the whole Haggadah. There's a couple really, really key ones. And thank you. And the real key, it says, Bechol Dor Vador, in every generation. What did I say? 23, yeah. Bechol Dor Vador, in every generation. Chayav Adam Liras Es Atzma. A person has to see himself, Ki'ilu Hu Yatsa Mimitzrayim, as if he went out of Egypt. Right? That's what you, and he brings verses to prove this. That not only that were our forefathers redeemed, but even we were redeemed. And that means on every Seder night, a Jew, to fulfill the mitzvah. The mitzvah of the Seder night is to feel that you have had your own personal redemption. Now that can be understood on many levels. Certainly, the Jew who went out of Egypt, the redemption they had out of Egypt, was very much a physical redemption. They were slaves. They knew about the lash of the whip. And they didn't have food. They were deprived. And what happened? They got their freedom. They were physically able to leave Egypt. Every Jew understood what it meant to leave Egypt and to have freedom. And not only that, but every Jew left a wealthy millionaire. So on the simplest physical sensory level, when the Jews were first redeemed, every Jew was able to sense a feeling of redemption. And there'd be different levels of redemption. Come to Mount Sinai at different level. That's already intellectual, and it will depend a lot on how smart you are and this and that. But when we came out of Egypt, everybody felt it. Every year, every Jew can go out of his own personal exile by feeling this revelation of the godliness inside of them that comes out through the simple physical acts that we do at the Seder. All right, so that is the goal. And many rabbis say that this is the most difficult mitzvah of the entire year. To shake a lulav isn't so hard, to blow a shofar isn't so hard. But to really feel like you went out of Egypt, that's not so easy. Now, obviously, you're going to say, what are you talking about? I haven't been to Egypt in a long time. Matter of fact, I have never been to Egypt. But as the rabbis tell us, what Egypt represents, the Hebrew word of Egypt is Mitzrayim. And in Hebrew, the word Mitzrayim has the same letters, if you change the dots, Meitzarim, which means confinement, constraint. And Egypt was a terribly confining place to the Jews, not just on a physical level, but on every level. Emotional, intellectual, spiritual. It was a confining lifestyle. Being a slave is confining. Each and every one of us has challenges with our Yetzer Hara, and we feel confined in so many situations. If we're confined by our character flaws, we can't control our tempers, and we're a slave to our tempers. If we're not a slave to our work, where if a rabbi calls you up and says, maybe you could learn a little bit a couple times a week, and a person says he has no time because he has to get up at 6 o'clock to go downtown, he doesn't come home till 8 o'clock at night, you want to tell me that that guy's not a slave? Even if he's making $250,000 a year, he is a slave. He's a slave either to his boss, he's a slave to his work, a slave to his insatiable appetite of having physical pleasures. Each and every one of us is a slave to past failures and not believing that one can ever improve. And each and every one of us, before we come to the Seder, to adequately prepare for the Seder, we have to make sure that we recognize where in Egypt we are. So we hope to be redeemed from that by the time that the Seder is over. So that takes a lot of preparation. If you don't even realize that you're a prisoner, then how are you going to know you've been freed? You know, the worst thing is to be a prisoner and not even know it. So that's what we have to all look into ourselves and see, where is my Mitzrayim that I have now? What is blocking me? What am I constrained with? And then hopefully through the Seder, when you can feel the godliness that's pulsating inside of you, you could realize that nobody can make me a slave. And I have total freedom, and I just have to act on the freedom that I know that is mine. And that is the goal of the Seder night. Okay? And that's the greatest way to believe in God, is to personally feel the salvation that He is bringing to you in your life today. That's what we have to experience. If we don't experience that at the Seder night, you're the man who sold a $50 shoe for $25. You missed the goal of the Seder. You did a lot of nice things, very traditional, and you kept your heritage, but you know, for all practical intents and purposes, from a business perspective, you wasted your time. Okay. Now, the method employed, as the rabbis tell us, that outward activities influence internal feelings. The more we do things physically, they impact how we feel. And the goal of Seder night is to meet the Almighty on the Seder night. The Zohar says that on the Seder night, we are literally dining at the Almighty's table. We just got to realize that the Almighty's at our table. And if we look at the Seder from an educational point of view, you will see that the Seder is the best lesson plan in terms of teaching. It has six components which should be used wisely. I'll just give you a little bit of examples, but you realize that when you are conducting a Seder, you have to always use one of those six components. Those are the best educational tools. This, as we know, everyone says the Seder night is for the kids, to teach the kids. Okay, if you're going to teach the kids, you better... How many of you are professional teachers? Not so many. So guess what? The Haggadah was written by the best educators of the Jewish people. The Tanoim, the earliest rabbis of the Gemara, the Talmud, they're the best educators. They show you their lesson plan. Follow their lesson plan, you'll be a good educator. And guess what? Not only are your children the goal of the Seder, but the childlike quality within yourself has to be addressed. And if you're only talking to the kids and not talking to yourself, you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah either. So those who have grown-up children, you still have to deal with the kid in you, and the kid in your teenager, and the kid in your adult married children, whatever. It's a lot easier with little children. It's a little bit more challenging with adults. So let's go quickly through the 6 points, the 6 tools, and you should always be using these 6 tools somewhere through the night. Tool number one, it's a story. There's a story being told. A story is always non-threatening. It's not a lecture. No one's lecturing you how to be a better person. We're going through a story. It's not demanding. It's enjoyable. Now we know, Rabbi Nachman says, in the general world out there, people feel that stories put people to sleep. But in Judaism, Jewish stories wake people up. They wake people up. And we come up with inspiring stories which can have similar themes. You're not limited to the Pesach story per se. There's so many other stories that you can tell, because there's been so many redemptions in the history of the Jewish people. And if you look at the Haggadah and you read through the Haggadah, you see it's not just the story of the Jewish people leaving Egypt. It's our national story. It's our national historical lifetime existence, our destiny that started in Egypt, but it continues and continues and continues. There's so many wonderful books. You could tell a story like this. I'll just tell you one. This is a very good Haggadah. I've got a whole array. So for mature people, but children can hear too, called the Holocaust Haggadah by Rabbi Gershon Weiss. And he totally focuses how one can develop one's faith in God by going through the Holocaust. And you can see how much faith you can get through the Holocaust, and how there's so many parallels between the Holocaust and what happened in Egypt. And Egypt was something that increased our belief in God. So the Holocaust should be able to do the same thing too. If you look at the special stories of people, you can see there's a lot of tremendous redemption that happened in the Holocaust. So he tells the famous story with the Bluzh of a Rebbe. This was in the concentration camps in Bergen-Belsen. So as what would happen always before Jewish holidays, the Nazis always tried to do something to spoil the holiday, even though it was spoiled before they even started. So it was the morning before Hanukkah. There's a random selection being made. The Germans went from barracks to barracks. They just take randomly prisoners out, and they shoot them dead in cold blood for no reason. And no one has the opportunity even to bury the dead. So the prisoners have to stand and walk over the dead people. It's to remember, you know, the grisly reminders of the morning's terror. But then again, that night was Hanukkah. So they wanted to light Hanukkah candles. How are you going to light Hanukkah candles in the concentration camp? So the prisoners, they wore wooden shoes that had been dyed black by the female prisoners. So the shoe dye was flammable, and it could serve as fuel. So it was arranged to have a little bit of the black shoe dye smuggled into the from the camp factory. So they got the oil, so to speak. Right? The threads were pulled from their garments, and they twisted them into wicks. So you got the wicks and you got the oil. So word spread that night there's going to be a secret Maariv service followed by the kindling of the Hanukkah lights. And the Bluzh of a Rebbe, Rav Spira, was going to lead the service. He led the services. He has the candle out there, and there's hundreds and hundreds of emaciated Jewish men standing around him. And he recites the 3 blessings on the first night of Hanukkah. And with this improvised menorah, realizing if they'd be caught, they would be punished beyond their gruesomest imaginations. So there's a secular Jew in the audience who goes over to the Bluzh of a Rebbe and says, "Rabbi Spira, there's one thing I don't understand. Okay, you uphold the tradition that you believe in. Good. Fine, you make the blessing. That Lahadlik Ner Shalchanaka, okay, make the bracha, we like the counts. You make the bracha that God made miracles, you make the bracha. But Rabbi, how in the world could you say the blessing of Shechayonu v'kiyamanu v'giyanu l'zman hazeh? We bless you that you've given us the life and the sustenance to come to this time. How could you make such a blessing? When you see the horrible, horrible situation we're in, and this morning so many of our Jews were just killed on the spot. Haven't you made a mockery of our suffering? So the Blush of a Rebbe answered, he says, you know, you're asking a very good question. And I too was wondering how I could joyfully make this bracha after what happened. And the truth was, after he made the second bracha, and before he made the third bracha, he stopped. He paused. He looked around. And then he made the third bracha. He said, you know, when I looked around, what did I see? I saw courageous Jews gathered together to watch the lightings of the candles of the menorah. And although we have the right to give hope, what do? We still insist on remaining Jews. He said, never before in my life have I seen such a demonstration of Jewish courage and strength. And for that alone, it's enough to thank the Creator that He's given us the privilege of being alive to seeing such greatness of our people. And I made the Shechayonu. Now that's a very appropriate story for the Seder. It's a very appropriate Seder to show that is real freedom. That is freedom. Freedom in a concentration camp. And that's when the person is able to reveal the godliness that's inside of himself. That person, that Rebbe, was much freer than the guy who has to work from 7 o'clock in the morning till 8 o'clock at night. He's a freer Jew than the other Jew. And these are the stories we have to tell people during the Seder night. So you use stories. Beyond the simple Haggadah story, you got all these kinds of stories. And there's a lot of good Haggadahs that can give you stories. And, you know, I know you're going to go to the store, you see a million Haggadahs, you're not sure what to buy. So I can just tell you from experience which ones work for me. Doesn't mean it works for you. This is a good one. There's another, you like really lots of stories and lots of parables. You got the Pesach Haggadah of the Ben Ish Chai. Ben Ish Chai. It's Sephardic rabbi, but lots of great stories and parables. Another great one with stories, the Palace Gates Haggadah. Also lots of good stories. And for those of you who like Karl Bach, they just put out a year or two ago, Karl Bach Haggadah, where he has stories from Shlomo Karl Bach, so you can't miss it. It's a picture of him on the cover, right? And he's got stories and also nice little short Hasidic vorts. So those are all good. If you like stories and you need to have them, they're there. Easy, just buy a few Haggadahs. You got all the stories you need. So stories is a critical thing. You should be telling lots of stories during the Seder night. That's one educational tool. Second educational tool is songs. Singing. All the Hasidic masters tell us that singing brings out the soul. Singing can bring out our soul in ways beyond what most things can. And thank God there's many parts of the Haggadah that have songs. The famous songs, if you don't know what they are, I'm sure someone's going to ask me to put on our website the songs to the Haggadah, right after, right, Barbara?
Yeah.
So I think they do sell in the bookstores. There's they do have those Haggadah songs. You should learn the famous Haggadah songs. You should sing the Haggadah songs. And again, there's songs that are in the Haggadah and there's songs that are not in the Haggadah. So I handed out to you a song that one of the children's tapes. If you have children. This is from the 613 Torah Avenue series of songs. And this one anybody can sing. It's the 10 Mako song. And kids love this one. This is sung to the tune of Dayenu. Everyone knows Dayenu. Dayenu. Everyone knows that one. it's the same thing. The song is this. The water is dam, all did shout. Tzvardeya were jumping in and out. Kinim were crawling everywhere. Arov were a scare. Then came Dever by and by. All the farm animals died. Shechin, boils and pimples too. On the Mitzrim, not the Jews. 10 Makos, Makos, 10. The Mitzrim were punished again and again. 10 Makos, Makos, 10. The Mitzrim were punished again and again. And then you have the second chorus. And even the adults will join in such a song. But if you got kids there, the kids love it. They eat it up. And that's something they weren't expecting. right? So you can, anybody can sing. You don't have to be a big singer. And you throw in songs, as many do traditional songs beyond the regular songs. The more singing, the more you're going to open up the Jewish soul. So that's method number two. Next educational method is variation. There's a lot of changing. We got sitting and then standing, covering the matzahs, uncovering the matzahs, picking up the cup, putting the cup down, dipping the vegetable, breaking the matzah, hiding a piece of the matzah, spilling drops of wine. You're doing a lot of things. You're not just sitting, right? And wherever it says I'm going to do something, you know, do it. And there's a lot of that to do. So that's another good thing. The variations that are built in the Agoda, we take the Ka'ara and take it off the table. And then put the Ka'ara back. There's so many things happening. Variation causes the kids and the adults to quit. What's going on? And the more questions, which is now number four, the fourth technique, is questions. We do so many things to make questions come to me. I come in like this. Someone's going to ask, what are you doing? Right? So the purpose of the questions is to pique the interest and get the participants involved. When people ask questions, they're eager to find answers. And therefore, we do so many odd things to stimulate those questions. And when there's young children, or even if there's adults, you reward the questions with prizes. At my Seder table, I've filled with gumballs and candies and all this. And I tell the kids, every question you ask, you know, beyond ridiculous questions, you know, you'll get a candy. And I throw a little gumballs and, you know, and wrappers and all that stuff. You know, we have a long Seder table. It's like 25 people. Like, good question. Throw it. And just throwing it across the room gets them excited. Right? You don't have that at a Seder. I'm not saying to throw, matzahs or things like that. But you have a candy that's wrapped up, so you throw it to the kids. And you reward them for those good questions. And an adult asks a good question, you give them a candy too. So that they want to ask the questions. Right? Number five. There's lots of eating and drinking. That's part of the lesson. You internalize the messages that are there. And finally, sixth educational tool is the intrigue. You never know what's going to happen till the end of the night, right? A wise use of the afikoman is going to keep the children awake. You know, there's different methods of how to use the afikoman, right? Some people, that's a matzah you break in half, right? So you put it behind you, so the kids try to get it. Well, you know, a clever parent will come up with clever ways of concealing it, right? Till the kids can't figure out where it is. You know, the traditional way is just put it behind. But there's all kinds of ways. Really, the custom of the Svardim, and I think it's a good thing for Ashkenazim, not only is Svardim, even Ashkenazim do it, is when you break the matzah in half, and when you put the bigger half into the little bag, so what you do is you put it on your shoulder, and you walk around the table. And he said, this is what our parents did when we left Egypt. That's what the Medrash says. They walked out with the matzahs on the back. They didn't put it on the donkey. The matzah was so special for them that they carried it themselves. And you can carry it, you can just go right out of the room, and then you can hide the afikoman yourself in a really hard to find place, and the kids are going to have a good time trying to figure out where the afikoman was hid. They're so excited that no matter how old the kid is, no matter how many years you've done it, they want to get Abba's afikoman, right? And it's obviously a better idea to have as many afikomans as there are children at the Seder, so no one's going to feel left out, right? And you make rules. You know, you the father can just, you know, even if it's just one father, no rule to say he can't make two afikomans or three afikomans, so that every kid, you make a rule, you can get only one afikoman, right? So every kid gets an afikoman. So they're not going to have afikoman. They know at the end of the day they're going to get a prize for that. That's going to keep them up. It's very rare a child who has the afikoman is going to fall asleep before the end of the Seder. Okay? So those are the six techniques that are there. And obviously, you can, these are just the standard you find that go to. You can go beyond that, and you can certainly, as long as you're not going contrary to the halacha, you can come up with whatever good ideas you make for yourself.
Yes. No problem breaking that one piece of afikoman into smaller pieces.
Yeah, well, what you could do is, you could do like this. You take the afikoman, you have one real afikoman per se, but you can have a couple other bags, get a couple other matzahs, and then make up a few more afikomans. I mean, you'll keep the one afikoman regular, but you have another two or three afikomans. You say, this is afikoman number one. Like, this is the main afikoman, right? But you know what? The second and third prize is afikomans as well. So there's the, you know, so if you get the big one, okay, that's the real Afikoman, right? The other two are still counted as Afikoman prizes, so everybody feels like they got something. You never want competition in this area. It's the worst thing to have one kid get the Afikoman and three didn't. That's the worst thing. But everybody, so what happens, you know, one finds, and then sometimes the little ones they can't find, and the older ones help the little one find it. So everybody gets an Afikoman, everybody feels good about it. Right? Yeah? You offer better prizes. two tickets to a Leafs game. You know, two tickets to a Leafs game. If you get the Afikoman, believe me, those grumpy old folks there, they're going to be very excited to find that Afikoman to get two tickets to a Leafs game. You know, there's always, everybody has a price. You know, everybody's got a price. And again, if the adults aren't into it, you don't have to use the Afikoman with them. You know, there's other ways of intrigue that can be used as well. Okay, now, making a good Seder, the rule is as easy as pie. Easy as pie. Pie. P-I-E. P-I-E. Right? P stands for be prepared. I stands for keep it interesting. E stands for make it entertaining. If you are prepared for the Seder, you've made it interesting and it's entertaining, you will have a successful Seder. If it's boring and you're just going through the motions and you're not prepared, it will be it's a failure. As the expression goes, right? Failing to plan is planning to fail. Right? That's the rule. If you're not going to spend a number of hours preparing your Seder, it will not be as good as it could be. You're going to probably spend as much time planning the Seder as doing the Seder, if not more, to make sure that it's a meaningful Seder. And you have to be willing to spend money on this or spending time and effort in this. Now, of course, you got to know your crowd and you got to provide age-appropriate programs for everyone in your crowd. And you have to realize, you know, and that's why I'm trying to come with as wide things as possible that everyone will appreciate. So, for example, I came in like this, right? So last year, we with the second Seder, we did a Bedouin Seder. We did a real Bedouin Seder, which was inspired from our trips to Eretz Yisrael, where when you go to certain parts of Eretz Yisrael, they give you dinners Bedouin style. So I figured if they do it that way, certainly why not to do it this way? And certainly, you know, our guests came, and my wife went to Fabricland, and she made like 20 of these. All you got to do is take a sheet, simple sheet, cut up, just put a hole in the middle. It doesn't take genius to do this. Already, I don't know where she got this, probably also in Fabricland, the belt. You make yourself a, whatever you call this thing on my head, you know, a shmata, right? Kafiyah. Put a thing around, and the guests didn't even know what was going to happen. It's like, we had 20, I don't know how many people at the Seder last year. We took the tables, and we collapsed the tables and put them on the floor and propped them up under, what do you call it, soda cases. So the table was just enough over the ground. We had pillows all around the table and covered them up, right? And then pillows on top of the pillows. And then when the guests came, all the Machalowitzes were dressed like this. We all dressed like this. And they came in and we said, here, we'd like to give you your outfit. And everybody, and nobody said no. Because, come on, you know, it's like a dress-up. And adults will agree to do this. We're gonna do it, and this is part of the mitzvah. Every Jew has to feel like he personally left Egypt. You can be sure that our great-great-grandparents looked something like this, give or take the color or the size, whatever. They did look like this, and when you put yourself back in time in their shoes, you begin to feel like perhaps that's exactly what happened. And they probably did not have furniture, and they probably ate on the floor with a table, with pillows and everything. And you do that. We had a Seder. It was a marvelous Seder. It went to like 3-4 o'clock in the morning. And we really were reclining like it says to recline. It was like really cute. You know, you're lying down. One person's lying on the other person's lap, and the other person's lying on his lap, and you had like a whole row of people lying on each other around as they're eating the matzahs, and it's a different feeling. It's a more casual feeling. People don't feel inhibited. you feel more expressive because, see, it's not you. You have these relatives who come and stuck up and they got their backs up. Oh, my religious neighbor, my religious cousin is making this Seder. And all of a sudden, and the way they are, Mr. Executive Vice President who comes in, who doesn't like doing religious things, and he doesn't want to be caught dead looking too Jewish. So what do? It's not him. Take off your jacket. Take off your tie. Here, put this Bedouin outfit in. Now you're a Bedouin for tonight. No one's going to know that it was you who was doing it. And you can sort of hide behind the mask and act in a way that you say, well, they'll say, what the heck? Why not play along? And then once they're going to play along, they got to do everything Bedouin style. You see. And then they can get themselves into the mood. You could start, when you start telling stories, get like images, Lahavdol of Arabian Nights, is coming in, but it's Egyptian Nights, And you're able to spin the story, and it's able to work. And I found a lot of success with that. And this is not expensive. To the whole thing, I don't know, didn't cost more than $100 for 20 people. It's a very inexpensive way. You can get fancy ropes, and it could even be nicer. But this is certainly a beautiful way to do this. Yeah, question? The kittel is, we'll get to that. Certainly, if you're the leader of the Seder, you have to wear a kittel. Right, which we'll talk about shortly, and that has to be done for the leader to wear a kittel. You can wear it on top, however you want to wear it.
Okay.
I would say, when you greet them, you have this, and then as they're here, and everybody's sitting down, then you put on your kittel over that. Okay, so that's that point. Now, again, you may have certain guests who want to start the Seder early, so that's a problem. There is a problem with that. So I'll briefly discuss that issue. According to the Torah, you cannot start the Seder before nightfall. Cannot start the Seder before nightfall. You have not, because it's not Pesach. It's not Pesach. It's very nice to eat matzah at 6 o'clock on Erev Pesach. But the problem is, not only you didn't do a mitzvah, but you've done something negative. Because you're not supposed to be eating before Pesach. And certainly not allowed to eat matzah before Pesach. So you can eat it on Pesach with an appetite. So it's a problem when people want to have an early Seder. And the earliest time to make a Seder this year is at 8:48 p.m. That's late. So I can appreciate there's going to be problems. So yeah, there are some ideas depending on your crowd, depending on a lot of things. The simplest suggestion is, you may, now again, there's different people here. So if you want to make a kosher Seder, you can't start the Seder before 8:48. There's nothing that says you can't do a Seder for your guests before 8:48 and finish it by 8:48. For example, you could start the Seder at 6 o'clock for them. Start the Seder at 6 o'clock, give them a Seder till 8:30, and they're very happy. You gave them a meal, you did a little of this stuff, and then, 8:30, it's getting late, and you tell your guests, it's been a long night, and then you move in to make your own Seder. Or you can do other things. You can say, listen, I know you're hungry, so we'll give you the meal first. And then when the meal's over, then we'll do the traditional Seder. We'll do the story of going out of Egypt and all that stuff. Then I know you're hungry, so we'll give you your meal first. No one's going to get upset with you if you gave them a meal first. And then you want to eat the meal after that, you have your own meal, you can do that too. So there are ways to compromise. As long as you're doing what you have to do, you're making Kiddush not before 8:48, you're not eating the matzah before 8:48, you can take care of your secular guests in a way that's a user-friendly way. And if they've had their meal, then they're willing to compromise and let you have your Seder. Now, every situation is unique, and you have to, get specific counsel in your situation. But I found that it generally is, you're able to overcome these barriers. Yeah.
Obviously, there'd be no matzah or brachot in Seder.
Well, it depends. Again, depend on what kind of guests you have. Most guests who want to start the Seder early, many of them, they don't even, care to make the blessings. And you can give them some matzah. You can give them some matzah. Why not give them matzah? You're not having the matzah, but you're giving them. You're like, you say, I will be like Avraham Avinu. You come in like Avraham Avinu. You're dressed up. They cannot ring on, they ring the doorbell, right? They knock on the door, whatever, and you come in dressed like this. Welcome to my home. I am Avraham, the son of Terah. And you take them into your house. You do the whole routine. So what's going on? Oh, we're leaving Egypt tonight. Very soon. Let's have our meal. You just role play it. They will go along with it. And Avraham, and you start talking about Avraham. Avraham had guests come into my tent. It's open on all four sides. And come and let me serve you. And that way, you get out of having to eat the meal while you're serving them. You see, Avraham never ate when he served his company. So you ring like Avraham. So they don't realize what you're really doing, right? What you're really doing is you can't eat, right? Now, if you want to be social, you can take a little drink with them, as long as you're not eating, look like you're joining them a little bit, maybe have a little fruit with them. But I mean, the main meal, I mean, technically, if there's really major shalom bias problems, real major shalom bias problems, you could have some chicken and some meat, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, so that they're not going to feel insulted. But matzah you can't eat. I mean, you wouldn't want to drink so much wine. So there's ways around this, very friendly ways that you can make your secular friends happy and you can make yourself happy. Yeah?
What about the egg matzah?
Egg matzah we do not eat on Pesach. That's a no-no. That's out. For Ashkenazim. Ashkenazim do not eat egg matzahs. I don't want to get into the details about that. The leniencies that were given were really only given for very elderly people who didn't have teeth or little children. And egg matzahs, Ashkenazim do not eat egg matzahs on Pesach. Yeah?
I have a question for you. The candle lighting happens, I think, at 7:48, right?
Candle lighting on the first night of Yom Tov can be really any time after what is called Plag HaMincha. So you can light candles. It's not like Shabbos. As long as you have a fire that's pre-lit, then you can light off of that any time. There's different customs. Some light at candle lighting. Some light later on. But anyway, what's the question?
So my question is, if candle lighting, let's say, is supposed to be, let's say, 7:48, why we're waiting until 8:48? I'm just curious how that works. Is that always an hour after?
Why are we waiting?
Yes.
No, you don't have to wait. I said there's different.
Start the meal.
Meal. Oh, we light the candles before sunset.
Okay.
Because from sunset till the stars come out, it's a questionable period. Is it the day before? Is it the night after? So we're stringent on both sides. To light on a Shabbos, for example, where you're not allowed to light after a certain night, by sunset it's too late. We have to light before the sun sets, before the questionable period of time. But to say that it's for sure the Seder night, we have to assume it's after the stars come out. So that's why we have to wait till 8:48. Okay? Now, let's continue. Okay, now, preparation is key. So a lot of things have to be done to prepare properly. Number one, I gave you a sheet. The other sheet is my handy-dandy checklist that shows you, I'm not going to go through it now, but you've got it. It tells you all the things that should be ready on the Erev of Pesach and before the Seder. And some things don't relate directly to the Seder, some are going to give to the whole shul anyway, but clearly what certain things you should do, first of all, you shouldn't be working the whole day. We don't have it. We ran out of copies, so we can make more later. Baruch Hashem, I wasn't expecting so many people, so thank God. So anyway, what one thing you want to do, really you shouldn't work the whole day of Erev Pesach. Rabbinically, we really are told to stop by about 1 o'clock or so. Past midday, one shouldn't work. And you should try as much as possible to take a nap on Erev Pesach.
By work, you mean your normal...
Work. Yeah, business work.
Not preparing.
No, making money work. That kind of work. Obviously, you're going to have to work to prepare for the Seder. So that's certainly permissible and what you have to do. But we're saying, you should be back from the office. You should leave the office and be gone by halachic noon, which is about 1:30 or so, something like that, because you have to be focused on the holiday. When we were in Eretz Yisrael, the Paschal offering was brought from midday Erev Pesach, so already it was holiday in nature. So you need to spend a lot of time preparing. You should and try to get yourself and every one of the children to take a nap, because you do want to stay up really late. That is part of the mitzvah, to stay up late. So you do need to get a good shluf beforehand. And all those items that we addressed and the preparations so that when you're ready to go, you're not wasting your time opening up a bottle of wine, finding out that the mara wasn't checked for bugs or this and that, and then you're going to spend 15, 20 minutes idling. The worst thing at any event, this is an event. This isn't dinner. This is an event. This is a big event. And you know, in event planning, you're not allowed to have dead time. That's the worst thing in event planning. You've got it all figured out. You know, we're going to have this first opening act, and then this act, and this and that, and things move. Can you imagine you go to this big fancy with 500 people? All of a sudden, you know, the movie presentation is over, and then the guy up front, he's not sure what to do. And then there's like a 5-minute break. They're not doing anything. The whole flow would be destroyed if it starts schmoozing and this going out. So you can't, you know, we didn't know what measurement of the cups. We don't know the right measurement of the cups. And the guy start looking to figure out what the cup and this and that. So, and the children are going to get restless if you do that. So everything's got to be prepared down to the last detail. So when the Seder is happening, everything's moving very quickly. Now again, very important to have identical copies of the Haggadah. Everyone has to have the same Haggadah, because you're going to be announcing pages, and you want people, you know, it's very, very disturbing, you know, well, what page is in my Haggadah? And you're spending 5 minutes to make sure everybody's on the right page for a page that you're only on for about a minute anyway. Spending more time finding pages than being in the Haggadah. So if you're looking for a recommendation of a Haggadah, the recommendation is, it's under my notes, right, is the one of them, and it's not very expensive, the R Scroll Family Haggadah. It's not very expensive. I think it's less than $5 a piece. And it's in Hebrew, it's in English. What?
$250 at the Israel source.
Good.
Buy 10, get 10.
Okay. $250 at a certain store and buy 10, get 2 free. Okay, that's good. It also has some nice little commentaries on the sides, good explanations what to do. So it's a very handy, convenient, user-friendly Haggadah. Listen, you can certainly always go with these red and white, red and yellow Haggadahs. If you're just going to be looking at the text, that certainly is fine. What I've been in the last 2 years, or maybe it's only been out for 2 years, this, I would say, is one of the best Haggadahs, especially if you have children, and there'll be a run at Israel's tomorrow on this, like there was last year. It's called the Cat's Passover Haggadah. It's written, the author is Rabbi Baruch Chait, Chait. And what makes this Haggadah amazing, and what I did last year for the company, every family that came, like a parents and two kids, whatever, every family gave them a copy. Number one, everybody likes a gift. Everyone likes a gift, and it really looks really nice. It is a bit expensive, too. So the guests feel honored that you gave them something so beautiful. And it's something that the parents will like to, everyone will like to looking at it. It's just so interesting. What makes it so nice? Besides, it's got some wonderful commentaries and some good Torah ideas. But it's such, I've never said good, it was such beautiful, true to Torah source pictures. And you know, I'll just show you, well, this one is just a Stama picture, right? It's a picture of of the Seder. But then when it comes to the plagues and it comes to Egypt, like it's amazing artistry. You're seeing the Egyptians and the taskmasters. There's such vivid pictures. You have the story with the five rabbis who stayed up all night until it was time to say the Kriya Shema. So you show how they're in a cave and they couldn't have known that it was when the sun was rising because they were hiding from the Romans. Amazing, amazing pictures. And when they get to Egypt and the place is unbelievable. Like this is they made us suffer, right? Take a look at that picture, right? I mean that, right? Look so, and then you got these are centerfolds that open up, and it's like unbelievable. The picture has so much detail of all the different terrible things that the Egyptians did to us, and if you look carefully, and the kids will be some, you know, kids like that, like where is find Waldo, you know those find one. They like looking at it. And you look at these little details, how you see the Jew here was made to catch a wild animal, and this one, they were beating this Jew this way, and this one had to go and hunt wild animals. It shows you all the terrible things that happened. It's lifelike. And throughout, and the one I like the best is the splitting of the sea. Splitting of the sea, and it gives you according to all the midrashim that were there, and you open it up. It's unbelievable. Like the dolphins swimming on the other side over there. You see the Jews on one side, the Egyptians on the other side. the kids will be mesmerized by the pictures, and the adults will love it. And so even if the child, let's say have a young child who normally wouldn't have the patience to sit through a Seder, you could, let's say, have a mother with the child on the side, shows the pictures. Now, what's even the best part of this Haggadah that makes it unbelievably phenomenal is in the back, they give you the cheat sheets. They give you every picture that was in the earlier part, and they explain with briefly exactly what was happening. Like they show you, for example, by the 10 plagues. So they show you the picture that was in the main thing, and they explain why wild beasts, why it was, a couple bullet points to explain what happened. And these are pictures. It's not, you know, this secular artist's impression of what was going on, the existential possibility of blood. You know, that's not what it was. It tells you exactly what, according to every medrash, what happened when there was the plague of blood. For example, we know that blood was coming out of everywhere, even out of the fruits. Right? So here you got fruits with blood coming out of them. Right? So every midrash, the way it was explained, you know, frogs, you know, some say the frogs were alligators. So they have a picture of an alligator in there. And they tell you in the back with the pictures. So now you can be a scholar in front of your children. Just prepare a couple hours and look at the back. And you'll show them the picture and say, oh, well, see, this picture was this because they made the Jews suffer because of this, and that's why they got that punishment measure for measure. And the measure says this, the measure says this. And you could be instantly a scholar with the pictures, and you've captivated everybody at the Seder. This is mamish, an unbelievable Haggadah to get. And then they also give you a little paperback with all the halachas, the how-tos, you know, how much matzah, when to do this, when to do that. So it comes in. It's a great Haggadah, and your friends will really thank you for that if you give them that when they come for the Seder. Yeah.
What did you say was called, the Cats Haggadah?
It's called the Cats. I guess there's a rich man named Katz who sponsored it, right? The Cats. The author is Baruch Chait, C-H-A-I-T. I think it is the best Haggadah around. Even an adult would like to look at it. Clearly, that would like to. You have that secular adult who's coming all with his back up against the wall, and you come in dressed like this, and you're Avraham, and you give him his gown to put on, and he sits down, and you give him this Haggadah, man, you've won, got 90% of the battles over already. Really. And if you're prepared, you know, and if they have kids, and the kids are excited, and they look at it, you've got it made. So that, I think, is very critical. Now, obviously, it's a long Haggadah. The Magid part, the telling of the story, is a long part. So we obviously, you have to be selective of what you're going to be looking at. Okay? You got to pick on sections you're going to focus on. If you're going to read it page by page. So if you've got, you know, kids from yeshiva, and they really looked it over, and they want to go through it, and you want to go in depth, by all means. But the whole point of tonight's class was to make the Seder meaningful and exciting and entertaining. That's not going to quite cut it. So you're going to have to be selective in which parts you're going to do. Obviously, that means you're going to have to look over the Haggadah, review it beforehand, refresh yourself about the songs, select which stories you want to say, which concepts, brief concepts you want to say, depending on the level of the people you're dealing with. And there are certain minimal parts to do. Again, you're not obliged to do the Haggadah from cover to cover. Don't feel there's this obligation you have to go from cover to cover, where you go through the whole thing and just reading it, and people are bored. And the point is to relive the Exodus. It's not a university course where I got to finish a certain amount of curriculum, right? So obviously there are certain things you have. You have to do the 15 steps of the Seder. You got to break the matzah and have all that. No one has a problem with that stuff. The problem is the Magid. When you got to go through that story after the Manishtana, right? Then it's like downhill usually. Oh no, he's going on. He's going to tell the story, right? So like on page 9 in that gutter, you're going all the way until page 25, you know, that's a lot of pages. Even if one side is English, it's still a lot of pages, right? So you have to be selective in what you're going to choose. Again, you have to know your crowd to make it exactly fit for them. But certainly the highlights, any part that's singing you'd like to do, the singing parts you want to do. So briefly, Page 9, Avadim Hayinu, which is the answer to the question of why is this night different. There's a nice song of Avadim Hayinu that can be sung, and that gives the basic answer. And then, again, in terms of bare bones, I'm going to give you the bare bones, no pun intended, that you like minimally, that you're giving them a form of a Haggadah. So you talk about that we were slaves in Egypt. Then you can skip the four sons. A lot of the next part is just preparations, right? And you really can go to page 12, where we pick up the cup and sing Vehi Sha'am Dalav Oseinu, which has some very powerful lessons we'll talk about. And then you start telling the story on your own. Tell the story of the Exodus. Again, if you have the book does a great job. It focuses on big pictures, on certain parts of the Haggadah, you know, and if you're just going through the Haggadah and looking at the pictures and giving you a little explanation, it goes quite quickly. You gotta go over the story. You gotta tell them what happened in Egypt. You gotta tell them about the miracles. If there's adults, there can be a discussion. Do you really believe that the miracles happened? Etc., etc. With little children, they're just fascinated by the story. And a lot of the pages, and they're, you know, you could skip a lot, 13, 14, 15, you don't have to painfully go through every verse the way it is deduced and back and forth. And then you go to the dippings of the wine by the plagues on page 15, Dam Ve'esh V'sim Rasashim, where you dip three times the wine out. And then on page 16, the 10 plagues, 17, the acronym for the 10 plagues, you sing your 10 plagues song over there, right? Then go to page 19, Dayenu, who doesn't like Dayenu? Right? That's a great one. Right? And then the most critical part of the Seder, if you really have to cut it down, is page 21, where Rav Gamliel says, whoever hasn't talked about these three things has not fulfilled the mitzvah. And that's Pesach, Matzah, and Morah. You gotta talk about Pesach, Matzah, and Morah. Even if the person who's in charge of the meal wants to go out and check on the food, they've got to be at the Seder for certain parts. You must be at certain parts. You have to be at the 10 plagues. You have to be on page 21. Rabbi Gamliel says, you got to say these three things. Pesach, Matzah, Morah. You got to talk about these three concepts. Why the holiday is called Pesach. Why we eat the Morah. Why we eat the Matzah. And then, page 23 really just moves us into the Hallel. And you have two paragraphs of Hallel, thanking Hashem, and then you make the blessing on the wine. So that's basically the bare bones. Do not feel tied to the Haggadah. If you want, like in my house, I have two Seders. One Seder is just with the kids, no guests, and you know, and our kids are knowledgeable, Baruch Hashem. We go through the Haggadah from cover to cover. Second night is usually guests, outreach, and people who aren't used to Seders like that. And the kids are already used to that. All of a sudden, I'm reading the whole Haggadah in English. You don't have to read it in Hebrew. You can read it in English to them. And then I'm telling stories, and I'm singing, and very little in the text. Very little in the text, because I'm trying to keep people's interest. All right. So feel free to go outside of the text, and don't feel that I have to go through every page of the text. I outlined you the main things you got to say. Those are the ones that are critical after the Manishtan. Again, I'll just quickly again review it. On page 9, Avadim Hayinu, because that's the crux of the answer. We used to be slaves and now we're free people. And there's a nice song that can be sung to that. Then you skip until 12, Vehisha Amda. We pick up the cup and we say, this, the promise that God made of the covenant between the parts, that's what's kept us alive from generation to generation. It's an amazing picture on Vehisha Amda, this Haggadah. Beautiful picture. And then you can go all the way to the dip in your finger for the plagues on page 15, three of them, and on 16, 10 of them, and on 17, three of them. And then you do Dayenu on 19, and then you skip to Rabban Gamliel on 21, talk about Pesach Matzah Mor, do the two chapters of Hallel, and then drink the cup of wine. And in terms of being in the text, you're not in the text for more than 7 or 8 pages. And that's doable. People can live with that. And they appreciate it. They appreciate when you make a big skip. You skip to there, great, he's a good guy. Right, you know, and people will appreciate that you're sensitive to their needs. As well, you can assign parts to other people. You don't have to be the only one reading. You could call up your brother-in-law and say, listen, Sid, I'm giving you page 20, and I want you to read for us this section. You know, as I don't know Hebrew, so say it in English. And I'd like you to give us an insight too. Again, depending on the person. A person might be very introverted and will feel threatened by what you do. You want to do it. But there are some people who like to talk. There are some people who like to show off a little bit in a good way. So you say, listen, and you can even email him the Dvar Torah and say, if you'd like, here's a suggestion. You might want to try this. You might want to give him a Haggadah before and say, here's a great Haggadah with lots. Could you share one story with us? If you get people involved, everybody feels that they have ownership. And this is better for adults and or teenagers. But then again, even little kids, if they know a little bit of Hebrew, can do this too. So you're not hogging up the spotlight. You're coordinating it. You see, you're coordinating it. Everybody knows they got a part. Everybody knows they got a part. They feel like they get excited. Oh, it's my turn. I'm gonna perform too. So they feel a little bit of ownership in the Seder, which is a beautiful thing. Okay, obviously, okay, that's, we're gonna skip. And I talked about this, all right? Now, of course, the big motivator for the head of the Seder is to put on that kittel. Very important to wear a kittel, because that's certainly going to shock people. It's good to shock people at the Seder. Right? A kittel is that, you see on Yom Kippur, you see the chazan dresses in that white gown, right? Really, all adult males who are married should wear a kittel on Yom Kippur, right? The day you get married, on Yom Kippur, and Pesach, the two nights of the Seder.
Not if you're leading the Seder.
Now, there's different opinions. Some say only the leader, and some say all head of the households. Different opinions on that. And the kittel is a very powerful motivator for the leader of the Seder. First of all, everyone's going to ask you why you're wearing it. That's great. That's what you want people to ask questions. Why are you wearing it? And so now you got to go figure out the answers, right? So the basic answer that you want to know. On the simple level is, you know, the priests wore white, and we're doing service. This is the most beautiful service we can do for God tonight, like a priest. Number two, just like Yom Kippur brings atonement and we're white and clean from sin, the Seder can bring atonement in positive ways. And Yom Kippur, you're crying and you're regretting and this, that. The Seder, instead of regretting and crying, you're feeling so much love of Hashem. Right? And when you feel so close to Hashem, it frees you from sin also. But for a parent, there's a much more poignant point. Because you know, the last time you wear a kittel is on the day of your funeral. And on the day of your funeral, you no longer can do any more mitzvahs to improve the quality of your life in the eternal world. And the only way that your quality of eternal life can be improved after you've put on that kittel to say farewell is only if your children are going to do Torah and mitzvahs. So now at the Seder, where it's your job to educate them, to be proud to be Jews, to be doing mitzvahs long after you have left this world, you put the kittel on to remember, one day I'm going to put the kittel on for the last time. And the only way I'm going to be able to eternally grow is if my children are going to have their own Seders and do their own mitzvahs. So a lot of parents say, oh, you know, I'm tired, let's just do the Seder quick. But you realize this is your moment. This is the time to implant in that child an impression that will last forever. The Seder moments for a child are the most precious moments. If you give your child a good Seder year in, year out, it almost will guarantee that that child's going to maintain his Jewish observance well after you've put on that kittel for the last time. And as Hillel says, "Im lo achshav emosai." If I don't do it tonight, when else am I going to do it? So that's a real good motivator. If you haven't bought one till now, buy one. There'll be what to talk about. People are going to notice you. Okay. What? You can get a kittel at any Jewish store, Jewish bookstore, that has it. You know, almost one size fits all, right? There's no style patterns here, no tapered waists or anything like that. You put it on, and there's also a lot of beautiful symbolisms. The kittel has no pockets. You know, it's when you leave this world, you don't leave with anything that you came into the world. You know what the Hasidic masters say? When a person's born, a baby's born, doctor, you can corroborate this if it's true or not, but the rabbis say so. Child's born, he's born with his fists clenched. Clenched. When a person dies, the hands are like this. Right? Because when you come into the world, everybody's grabbing. Me. I'm taking. When you leave the world, there's nothing to take anymore. That's why the kittel has no pockets. You can't take anything with you. Right? So you got to realize there's nothing I can take with me besides the fact my mitzvahs that I have. And tonight's the night to get that done.
Contrary to what the Egyptians thought.
contrary to what the Egyptians thought. Exactly. The Egyptians, what do? They make the what do you call it, the pyramids, and they embalm themselves. They embalm themselves because they knew that if your bones don't disintegrate into the ground, the soul really doesn't leave. If your body's intact, it finds difficulty going to the next world, and it kind of hovers around your pyramid. And they put all their wealth in and figured they could take it with them. And that's the exact opposite of what Judaism feels. There was a hand? Yeah?
So why do you wear the kittel?
Why do we wear the kittel? So again, the kittel is symbolic of the Jew in a state of feeling connected to God. The white purity, it's like, you know, when you got that white kittel, you don't notice my silver buttons on my vest. I don't notice the designer picture over here. It's a plain white garment. That's a symbol like an angel of purity. It's the only thing I can notice is my soul. Everything else is covered up in white. When a person dies, what do you think they're more knowledgeable of? Their soul. The ultimate awareness of soul is when you leave this world. Right? Yom Kippur, we act like angels. We totally avoid the body. On Pesach, you achieve it a different way. Instead of crying and getting rid of the physical, what you're saying is, I could take all this physical and learn it's a beautiful gift from God. As a beautiful gift from God, I can come close to God that way as well. Yeah?
I never knew what the meaning of the three plagues, the blood, fire, and pillar of the soul.
Okay, you know what, I'm not going to get into, I'm just avoiding that because there's a million questions we can get into. I'll talk to you privately about that. I'll answer to you privately. Yeah.
Now the kittel, when someone asked earlier, should you wear it on the outside of a Bedouin costume or on the inside?
Yeah, I think it really doesn't matter, but I would suggest on the outside. You start off, you greet the guests with your Bedouin costume, and then you put the kittel on over. Put the kittel on over it.
At what point do you have to be ready?
Before you start Kiddush. Okay? Now, although you are an Orthodox Jew celebrating the Seder, you should be very unorthodox in how you present things. Okay? That's the one thing, to be unorthodox in presenting things. So, for example, when you tell them that Moshe came into to see Paro, so you tell them he was able to change his stick into a snake. This is a really nice snake because it kind of like moves around. And you go around the kids, stick it in their face, and they start to jump. You know, if you're really good at it, you kind of, while you're telling the story, you just like bring it up over the table like this. You say, well, you know, Moshe went to power and he wanted to prove to him that God sent him, and he took this stick over here, and then all of a sudden, and then they just, there's a snake, you know. And just get it, go over there. And it's a rattlesnake. You can make it. You know, start it under the table. Depending on the children's and the age of, be so careful. You could scare someone to death. But that's a really nifty. Get on a table, the kids are going to, this is a whole year long we're preparing for the Seder. My wife, she's, her tzaddikas, whatever, she goes to these dollar stores, she always says, oh, that's going to be for the Seder. It's in June. She's saying, that's going to be for the Seder. You come now, you know, everybody's sold out of these things, right? Then of course you need the, you know, when they talk about the plague of the locusts, you toss these around, right? just throw it at everybody. Ah, what are those things? And then my wife just picked one up this year. This is an inflatable frog. Okay? So you got a frog. I mean, you get the whole thing. You know, there's all kinds of bugs. You know, I don't have to tell you how to get bugs and different types of bugs. And you have it all, and that brings it to life. Every one of the plagues, you could do a different thing. If you want more of that, you get the Haggadah that's called by the Passover Survival Kit. Passover Survival Kit by Shimon Apsdorf. It tells how you can do each one of the 10 plagues in a way that shows it physically. You take the water, put a little red dye in the water, that's the blood, and you have the props for the frogs and the lice. There's different ways you can show it. You know, if you're really great, you know, you get a timer to just turn the lights on exactly when you come to Hosha. You know, that would, or what you do is you put on these dark glasses that they can't see through. So that could be like darkness. So there's different ways to go through those plagues. There's all kinds of other things you could do. You could play games. You could play Jewish Jeopardy game. Jewish Jeopardy. You could do plagues for 50, plagues for 80. Moses for 20, famous Jewish leaders for 90, right? most despicable anti-Semites for 200. And you can pick up great topics. It doesn't take a lot of brains to come up with this. And during any part of the Gaudah, you say, you know, we're going to play Jeopardy. We're going to be Haggadah Jeopardy. You have to prepare the questions. It has to be a crowd that knows a little bit more. And the kids love having that kind of competition. It's a wonderful thing. If you really wanted to go full blast on this, I haven't done this yet, just haven't had the time, but I think it's a great idea. You give out T-shirts at the end of the Seder. You know, we left Egypt 2006. You know, as they leave, you know, here, we just put on a T-shirt and you go out, and they'll always have something to remember your Seder. I think that's a great gift. I just wish I had the time to do that, right? And always, as I said, giveaways. Have them leave the Seder. If you've really given them a meaningful Seder and they really feel touched by the Seder, you could then, you know, perhaps give them a small Jewish book and say, you know, you had such a good time. Here's another present. You know, maybe you want to read it on your free time. And that's about the only time you could really give it to them that they're not going to feel threatened. Again, if you give them this book, the Haggadah, it's a good book, but it's not a bad time to find a small little pocketbook book on Jewishness. Say, here's a parting gift, so to speak. You did such a good job. You won the Passover Jeopardy game. The Schwartz family wins. You know, a Torah books, you know, something like that. All right. Now, getting back to more of a little bit of a serious nature. Again, speaking on the focus here, the concept of cause and effect. All right. Now we're saying the effect we want to create is faith in God on a sensory level, right? That's the goal. Everything I've been talking about has been dealing with the senses. You know, it's everything. The singing, the snake, the frog, the candies, everything. We're not getting too much to the mind tonight. Not really a lot to the mind. You don't want to get the heavy, heavy ideas. But we got to figure out what is going to be the key tool that's going to create this result of faith through the senses. So this is how the Haggadah begins. And in your Haggadah, that should be on page 9. Another key phrase. Certain key phrases that if you have adults, you surely want them to understand those phrases. The early one I said, that every Jew has to feel like he came out of Egypt. Again, with adults, that's a great discussion topic. But on page 9, in the answer on page line 7, the reason I like this Haggadah is because it has line numbers, which is always helpful too, this Haggadah. Avadim ayinu l'parav Yitzrayim. We were slaves apart in Egypt. He took us out. But on line 8, he says, the ilul ha'otzei kodesh baruch ha'savasem Yitzrayim, had God not taken us out of Egypt, we and our children, our grandchildren, the whole family would still be there. Would still be there. That begins the theme of the night. What's the theme of the night? What's the cause that's going to give us the effect that we want to get? The effect is belief in God through the physical senses. What's going to be the cause? What's going to be the tool? The tool is, in Hebrew, Hakaras HaTov, appreciation. The theme of the night is God Appreciation Night. You have baseball games, have Fan Appreciation Night. This is God Appreciation Night. The tool of God appreciation is the cause that gets the effect of belief in a sensory way. What this little line is really saying, I forgot there was this family in the 30s or the 40s. I forgot this young kid, this family. Baruch Hashem, I'm forgetting this stuff. I used to watch movies. There was a family that performed, and the youngest kid got up and he said, "I want to thank you. I want to thank you. My father wants to thank you, and my mother wants to thank you." Remember? Any older people remember this? I don't remember. Anyway, it was a nice thing. You know, everyone wants to thank you. So over here is the same thing. You know, what you're really saying is, I thank you, God, on behalf of my family, on behalf of my Zaidi, on behalf of my great-grandfather and my great-great-grandfather, going all the way back to my Alter Zaidi in Egypt. For if you hadn't saved my family, we would still be slaves to power in Egypt today. So the whole focus, the whole theme that's pushing everything is gratitude. You can't, every page of the Haggadah is laced with gratitude, and in so many different ways to show the gratitude. And if you have so many ways of expressing your gratitude, it has to end up in belief in God. And this is the process of the night. Now, you may not be as overt as I am right now. I'm telling you the way it's going to go. You don't want to club them over the head with gratitude, But the message is going to seep through. Now, depending on the level, it could be adults, you could really just say straightforward gratitude. We're showing, see how much Hashem loves us? And Hashem does this, and Hashem did that. And you get overwhelmed by this. This is very important. And there's so many different ways that gratitude is brought out in this physical way. You know, many of us, we're going to live a long time. You know, you could live till 120 and have 240 Seder nights. And every year you could eat matzah and be dizzy from the wine and find the afikoman every year. You can cry over the mor. You could say 100 commentaries on the 10 plagues. But if you haven't gotten to this cause and effect, you haven't been in Egypt and you haven't gotten out of Egypt. You got to have that cause and effect. Very important concept over here. Beyond the action mitzvahs, we got to get that goal. And these are the mechanics of the evening to get to this idea of Akar Satov, of gratitude. The Chovas Alvavas, the author of the Duty of the Heart, says, the basis of service to God, the only reason a Jew would do what God wants you to do is if the Jew has gratitude to God. If you don't have gratitude to God, you won't do what He wants you to do. A simple level. You're walking in the street, a car is going by, it's going to nail you. And this guy jumps in front, pushes you away. You just miss getting killed by a fraction of an inch. Right? The next day, the guy calls you up and says, you know, could you do me a favor? I don't have a car today. Could I borrow your car? So what are you going to say? Well, you know, I'm kind of busy, and it's really hassle. I had other plans for today. The guy's going to say, you saved my life. The least I could do is lend you the car. Right? What we want to achieve in our service to God is to have this attitude, that's the least I could do for God. After everything that God has done for me, He saved me from this, and He saved me from that, He's given me this, He's given me that. The least I could do is do some mitzvahs. And that's what we're trying to get Jews to walk out of the Seder feeling at some level. And this structure goes through the whole thing. And that's the whole reason why Jews, you could ask someone at the Seder, what do we call Jews? Simple questions. What were Jews originally called? Hebrews, right? Okay. Now after Hebrews, right? We were called Jews, right? Jews, Yehudim. What does Yehudim mean? What does it mean to be a Yehudi? Comes from Yehuda, comes from Hoda, which means to give thanks, appreciation. The definition of Jewish people, the definition of a Jew, a Yehudi, means a person who knows to give thanks. Throughout the day, we say, Moda Ani, I give you thanks through the blessings we make. We give thanks to God. As opposed to Paro, who's a person who had no gratitude. The Jews enriched Paro. What did he do to thank them? He made them slaves. Yosef made Egypt the wealthiest country in the world. The Jews made the economy unbelievable. They helped. So what did the Jews get for gratitude? You became our slaves. Power is the antithesis of gratitude, and we are... Wait, it's getting away. Okay, so we have to show how important gratitude is. Okay, very important point. So let's go through some parts of the Seder. We'll come back to appreciation. Maybe we'll do it right now. So let me show you a couple areas, and it's not meant to be exhaustive, of where you want to focus on appreciation. Where you want to... In whatever fashion you're going to do it, these are appreciative parts of that Gada. So again, that page 9, Avadim Hayinu, knowing we were slaves. First point of appreciation is know where you came from. Right? The Talmud says you start saying things that you know show that we weren't so great, and then we end off showing how great things were. Our great great grandfathers were idol worshippers. Right? Our grandfathers were slaves in Egypt. We had no hope. And look, because of God, we're free people. You know, everybody loves a rags to riches story. Everybody loves that. We are the epitome of rags to riches. So we got to remember, look what we used to be, and only because of God. Look, the world was depraved. The world was a bunch of heathens. The world was a bunch of people who took little babies and threw them in volcanoes to make the gods happy, take their firstborn children and kill them, treating women like chattel. a world that had no morals and no principles. And look what God did. He pulled us out of that. And he made us be a guiding light to the rest of the world. And because of us, the rest of the world's a better place to live. And then you can whip out all kinds of quotes that secular people say about how wonderful the Jewish people are for the world. Mark Twain's famous lines about the Jews. Paul Johnson's famous lines about the Jews. If it wasn't for the Jews, where would the world be? We have so much to thank God for what we were. We, Baruch Hashem, we're not those depraved people anymore. And again, depending on who you're talking to, you can look today, people with no morals. How is it that we have morals in our family? Because we have a Torah that's been keeping us to be moral people. We have so much to thank Hashem. So we look to the roots. That's the Avadim Ayinu. That's the whole point of Avadim Ayinu. Right? We pick up the cup by Vehishamda. Right? What does it say? Not only our fathers, but in every generation they're trying to destroy us. In every generation. Hasn't been a generation where the world has tried to destroy us. Including this generation. This generation, where all the Arabs want to destroy us. Europe wants to destroy us. The United States, you know, unfortunately has to be friends with a democracy. Right? But they sell us down the river like everybody else. There's nobody there who likes us. The whole UN condemns us every Montag and Donnerstag. Right? Every Monday and Thursday. Right? So we're still around. So it's not just rags to riches, but it's continuous. There's a history of kindness. That's going way back. And if it wasn't the Purim story and this story, the miracles that have happened throughout the history of the Jewish people. You tell them the story of Pascal and Louis the 14th, right? The story where Pascal was Louis's religious advisor. And he says, Louis, you got to be more religious. So Louis says, okay, I'd be more religious. If you could show me a divine sign that there's a God in this world, I'll be more devout and more pious. So it's reported that Pascal said, you're looking for a divine sign? You're Jews. The Jews, Your Majesty, the Jews. That's the divine sign. The fact that the Jews have survived 4,000 years of anti-Semitism and 2,000 years without a national homeland, and they're still Jews, and they're still the people who win more Nobel Prizes than anyone else, even on a secular level, how we improve the quality of the world, that's the biggest proof there's a God in this world. So Jewish history is something to show gratitude for. Obviously, when we sing Dayenu, there's 15 steps, go through every little part, every little detail. It's not just that you slayed the firstborn and you saved us and you gave us manna in the desert and you brought us to Mount Sinai and you this and every little detail. Appreciation depends on detail. You imagine your wife makes you a dinner, a 10-course dinner. At the end of the dinner, you just say thanks. Well, if I was a wife, I'd give you a thanks. Okay, you know, I'd get more than a thanks for a 10-course dinner. And you detail the thanks. I appreciate that you bought all the food in the supermarket. And it probably took you an hour and a half, especially on Erev Pesach, to pick up all the food. Right? And you had to schlep it into the house and then put it into the pantry. And then you had to take the food out and you had to clean the chickens and you had to this, you had to that. And husbands, if you're smart, you will do this. It will pay in the long run. It will pay, you know. But you're a mensch anyway. And you detail all the steps, and then you'll appreciate it more. And Dayenu is the details. And as we come to the end of the Maggid, we say, Lafikach, therefore we have to begin to say Hallel. Each of us has to praise, and now then each of us has to look for personal praises. Not just that God saved the Jewish people in Egypt, and not just He saved us in every generation, and not that we detail it all, but what has God done for me? And for many of us who are Baalei Teshuva, there are probably important milestone events in our lives that maybe at the time looked terrible, but maybe they weren't, where God did something to give you, to pull you out, to save you from your own slavery. And you should tell people your story and say, what did God do for me personally? A meaningful event in your life. You know, I didn't know how to read Hebrew until I was 35 years old. And then, whatever your story was, and this is how I got to, and I'll never forget God's kindness. You know, in mysticism, we say there's two ways that God acts with us. One is called itaruta de la ela, and one is called itaruta de la tata, which means one is called an arousal from above, and one is called an arousal from below. Which means, in a simple level, in terms of our relationship with God, what happens? A Jew, let's say, is looking for something. He's searching for God. Something's bothering him. He wants to find an answer. He goes here. He goes there. He's looking. He's initiating the process. And guess what? You keep looking. God helps you find something. And you get an arousal, but it was initiated from below, from you. There's other times where you're really not looking for anything, and you thought your life was wonderful as a secular Jew, or a Jew not going anywhere, or a religious Jew not growing, being an FFH from habit, right? And you're not really growing in your Yiddishkeit. And then you're on a plane and just happen to meet somebody, and that person gets in a dialogue with you, and he asks you questions, and it's the first time in 35 years you've bothered to think. And then we got off that plane, you met somebody who introduced you to somebody, and before you knew it, you were going to a class and learning Torah. And then 3 years later, you're an observant Jew, or a Jew with feeling. That was initiated from above. God made that happen. Knowing that you'd come good, you'd do good on the installment plan. That Hashem gave you installment of a good chance, knowing that you're going to come through on that. And to figure, what were those times in my life? If I could go and find those key events through my life, 25 years ago, I had this teacher. If it wasn't for this teacher, you know, I could go do my story. You know, there's lots of points in my life, you know. When I was in high school, I was grade 12. My Rosh Masifta, he said, Yossi, you have to go to yeshiva. You have to go to yeshiva. I want to go to university, so you have to go to yeshiva. He convinced me to go to yeshiva. I said, okay, but I'm only going for 1 year. Not more than 1 year. Then I'm going to university. Well, in the middle of 1 year, my Rebbe starts working me over, telling me this story and that story, this and that. So 1 year became 2 years, and then 2 years became 3 years. 3 years became 5 years. God sends me a wife. I'm learning in the Beis Medrash. This guy, I don't even know, I have a casual relationship with him. He says, are you going out? I said, well, yeah, a little bit. He says, well, there's this girl from Toronto. She happens to be in town. Would you like to go out with her? You think I ever thought I was ever in my life? You got to remember Americans' mindsets. Like Canada is like the polar region. Like who in there, an American? You got to know, I know you like to bash Americans, but think what it is to be an American first. You are a member of the greatest country in the world. You got to remember that. So you got to remember that. Americans are the greatest people in the world. They are the world's caretakers. You should see Robin Williams did a whole thing. He somebody sent me an email yesterday. Robin Williams had it in Arabic, I love New York. And he says, where, you know, people don't like the Americans interfering, right? He says, yeah, you know, we better stop those Americans interfering. Like in World War I, when they joined the Allies and turned the tide off, they shouldn't have interfered then. And in World War II, when they were killing people in Europe, you know, we should have stayed out of it and let Hitler do what the hell he pleased. You know, it's the greatest country in the world. If you hate them, and people hate them for that. Right? So Americans, they're never going to go to Canada to find a wife. I would never have done that. I'm going to go to New York, Chicago, Baltimore. So God said, no, I want you to be in Toronto. I'd never, of my own free will, go to Toronto. Never. Never. An American to go to Canada? What, you have the CFL over in Canada. That's not real football. You know? Well, you're going to attack me if I go any further, right? Well, you got. But I'm saying, you got to know what an American feels like. I'm not going to go to Canada. You're going to give me a shidduch to go to Canada? I'm not going to go to Canada. Forget it. So God providentially made it. My wife happened to be in Cleveland and had a couple spare days that she didn't have what to do. So I said, why don't you just go out with her? So God's like pulling me by the chain. You're going to go to Canada. You're going to go to Canada. And at the time, no, we're getting married in Cleveland. We got married. We were staying. I was in Cole for 5 years. I was in Cleveland. And I figured for sure, you know, I'll get a job, you know. So I got an interview. You know, I went to Savannah, Georgia to see if I could get a job over there. And I went to another place. The last thing on my mind was Toronto. And then all of a sudden, I get a call. My father-in-law, bless him, he davened next to the executive director of Eitz Chaim. I said, you know if there's any jobs in Eitz Chaim? So I don't know. I'll check it out. And he spoke to the principal there. He says, yeah, there's a job opening. And my father was friendly with the executive. At least I can get an interview. So I get an interview. And my luck that I'm from the Telz Yeshiva and the principal of Eitz Chaim is an alumnus of the Telz Yeshiva from 30 years ago. And he has an affinity to graduates of Telz Yeshiva. And me, a guy with no teaching experience, I get to teach in a big league school. Right, that I have to work my way up through the minor leagues so I can get to a big city. I got a plum job in year number one. Not because of any talent on my part. See how God's just leading me there, and I just follow.
That's not what I heard from your students, Rabbi.
That was after the first year. First year, all you don't want to know about the first year. But anyway, see how God's just leading you by that chain? And you think you're in control of your life? If you would have asked me 30 years ago, that's how long ago it was, 30 years. Okay, if you asked me 30 years ago, and so you'd be a rabbi in Thornhill teaching people about the Seder, I'd laugh. Well, I was going to be a doctor. Don't forget, a surgeon, right? And you see, it's not the way you want it. And then you have to spend the Seder night. You got to thank God for those critical moments. You see, what do they call tonight? Tonight's called the Seder. It's a Seder. Not only a Seder of the things you do, but it's the Seder of your life. Seder means an order. You have to sit down and go through your life. Share it with your wife. Share it with your kids. Sit down with your kids and say, I want you to know what brings me to this place at this time. And each and every one of us has our own little Seder to tell. Each and every, and you could talk for hours. How you met this one. How you met that. How this tragic event in your life, now that it's 30 years later, and you look back from a mature point of view and say, you know, that was a real good learning experience for me. And I would have been a different person had that not happened. You know, had my father not been sick since I was a little child, I may never have gone to yeshiva. Had I been raised in a more affluent home, I certainly wouldn't have gone to a yeshiva. But God had a different plan. So you have to, but when you're 13 years old, you don't see that, and you're mad at God, and you're upset. But then you get old, if you stick in the game long enough, and you go over the Seder of your life, you have only gratitude to show God, and when your children see that, and you tell them the stories, they learn what that gratitude is that we give to God. And that makes every Seder meaningful. You go to every adult in the room. And it's a thing I do every Shabbos, but you could certainly this at the Seder table. You see how you're trying to convey this mood of gratitude? You say, I'm so thankful to God for this. You just keep saying this. A lot of people don't even hear those words anymore. You know? Thankful God. I have an uncle of blessed memory. He was a Ger Chassid. And then when he came to the States, he became a little more modern. But he always said, you know, before Robert Volson, he always said, thanks God. Thank God. Thank God for this. Thank God for that. He told me his Holocaust stories. He told me the first minute he was taken out, they were freed, and he told me the story. He said, and when the American soldier said, what can I do for you? What do you want? And my uncle said, the first thing I said is, give me a pair of tefillin to wear. You know? This is like really people telling you these real things. Right? So that's gratitude. So a good activity that you could do with people, I've told you before, good activity, and we'll get them very nervous. Say, we're going to think for 2 minutes, and each one of us is going to think of something to thank God for, a pleasure. Come up with a pleasure that you've had in the last week. And you know what's going to happen to these people? They're going to get very uncomfortable. They're very uncomfortable because they have not even bothered to think to live life that way. What do you mean? I had a pleasure? I'm not going to have a pleasure. I have a lousy job. I have a lousy wife. I have lousy kids. I work like a dog. Right? The TV shows are repeats. Right? The Leafs aren't going to get into the playoffs this year. What I got to be thankful about? I said, you know, before you leave, I want you to be thankful about something. And if you know how to do this right, you give them enough advance notice to think about it, you go around the room, 20 people, and they're all going to have a lot of things to be thankful for. And you're going to find that most of the things that they're thankful for don't cost any money either. So these are some of the things. I didn't finish, but there'll always be something for next year. But this is definitely enough for you to work on as a base. And God willing, if we can get everyone who's at that Seder to have something to be thankful for, to walk away with gratitude to God, to develop this physical emunah in Hashem in an enjoyable educational way like this, then you can be sure that their memories of this Seder will go on far past the Seder and will be able to bring family and friends together again in spiritual situations in the future until we all come together. When you end the Seder, of course, Lashana Haba Yerushalayim, you sing four or five different versions of Yerushalayim songs. And at the end of such a Seder, you won't be surprised to see that maybe some of your guests may even have a tear in their eyes. To know maybe there's something very beautiful here that I missed the first time around. Maybe something I want to find in the future. Thank you for listening and have an enjoyable Seder.